Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey Andre, you know I just got to drive a freaking race car.
No way, dude. Yeah. Which race car?
A BMW GT4. Ooh. M4 GT4. It's a pure on, hard as nails, carbon fiber seat, steering wheel that pops off, make you clench your butt so hard your eyes want to pop out race car. What were you driving?
I was driving off-road, actually. I was not in a race car. I was in a Nissan Armada SUV. And Nathan was following, and we did a video with also the new Forerunner TRD Pro.
All right, so in this episode of TFL Talk, we're going to be talking about every BMW there is, because I just got to drive all of them pretty much, as well as all the minis, as well as, if I wanted to, Motorrad. And we're, of course, going to be talking about my favorite topic, which is off-roading. But let's talk about BMWs first. What do you say,
Andre? But there's another topic in this show.
There
is. Which is Alpina.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You forgot one of my favorite BMW models is their Alpina lineup.
The best car you've never heard of. So let's start with that. Over at TFL Car, we've got a video on it if you want to see it. By the way, if you want to keep up with all of our videos, just go over to tfl-studios.com where you can download an app to your phone that allows you to basically see all our podcast videos and news. And speaking of news, before we get to the Alpina, today, Andre, as this video airs, you are actually in Las Vegas. Well, not today, but the future you on Monday is yes. In Las Vegas. Tell me, why are you going to Vegas?
SEMA show, dude. 2021 SEMA. It's basically an extravaganza of new vehicle, truck and car, accessories. It's an industry show. But on Friday, actually, of that week, they're letting some public in this show.
Really?
Yeah. It's called SEMA Ignited.
They let public in every year. It's never just insiders. It's always a lot of like hungover Aussies and Germans wandering around with...
And maybe Russians?
And Russians wandering around with bags full of stuff, trying to find where the tire tent is of the half-naked women. That's true.
It's much more than that, but I hope.
Well, that's always part of the fun at SEMA. So if you're going to SEMA, or if you are at SEMA today, give us some previews. What are some cool vehicles that are going to be featured at SEMA that we'll have, of course, complete videos on?
Yeah, so last year SEMA didn't really happen because of COVID, right?
Yep.
So there is a lot of pent-up demand, and people, you know, want to show off their accessories and all kinds of truck and car stuff. And this year, major manufacturers are bringing their vehicles, concepts. We're talking about Ram TRX, Rex Runner. We have stuff from Chevrolet. Ford's bringing many, many trucks, of course, and cars like the Mustang. We have Jeeps. We have Dodges. And then, of course, smaller companies do their own custom jobs.
Wait, you just kind of skipped over the headline. Isn't there something special that Ford will be unveiling? Don't you have a special invite to Ford program?
Yes, it's a new Bronco edition.
Ooh,
it's an addition to the Bronco family.
So you think they're going to unveil the Raptor Bronco?
I really hope so. So wow. As far as this taping of this episode, this podcast is concerned, I do not have a lot of information about this.
There's no tape in that machine, just a chip.
A chip? Just digital bits?
Just the digital zeros and ones.
Wait, there's no tape?
There's no tape.
Okay, as of this recording, I don't know a lot of information about, but hopefully the new Bronco Raptor is actually coming out.
Now, in case you guys aren't familiar with SEMA, which, you know, is doubtful, but just in case, it stands for, I believe, Specialty Equipment Manufacturers Association. It's one of the biggest shows in Vegas. I think it's only second to CES, Consumer Electronics Show. And this year, it is a little smaller. They're saying probably, you know, down maybe 40,000. 30%. Usually it takes, you know, at least a good half hour to 45 minutes to walk from one end to the other. If you wanted to walk the whole thing and all the aisles, it'd probably take you all day. And basically, it's all of the people out there who are customizing and who are providing aftermarket stuff for every vehicle known to man, I think.
Yeah, and unknown to man.
To man. So usually what you end up with, obviously, is a bunch of like crazy lifted trucks, crazy lifted Jeeps, crazy lifted Broncos now.
Lower trucks, everything.
Along with all of the performance vehicles, right? So you're going to have slammed everything. And
Mustangs.
And supercharged. And there's just a lot of cool stuff going on. And, you know, the big news, I think, that came out before, ahead of time, that's already been announced is, of course, GM has a 1,000 horsepower. Is it a 10-liter power plant that they'll be selling to you?
It's like a 633 cubic inch displacement crate motor.
Yes.
And they're working actually with Hoonigan to put it into an older Camaro. So you will see that as well. 1,000 horsepower, 10-point-something liters.
Yeah,
right?
I thought the Elephant was you know
big,
but no. Apparently, we're going bigger than that. I remember me and you were at SEMA one year, and the thing about SEMA and being a journalist is it's really hard to get your arms around it, right? You can't figure out what the interesting stories are because everything is so crazy cool. But we were GM used to do this thing where they would unveil all their special editions, plus they would have like the Copa Camaro, right?
Right.
And then I was sitting there, you know, having some snacks, and this guy came up, and I said, "What are you here for?" And he said, "Hey, I'm here doing, you know, a specialty vehicle." And I'm like, "Well, what is it?" And he goes, "Prius." And I went, and then I'm like, "Prius?" And he goes, "Yeah, we Hellcat swapped it." And I'm like, "You Hellcat swapped a Prius?
Let's see it."
Yeah, and basically it turned it into a funny car, right, where the whole front end opened up, and I was like, wow, that is the it vehicle. So, you know, hopefully you can find the it vehicle at this year's SEMA. But go to TFL Now, where Andre is going to be posting every video from SEMA.
As much as possible. Yeah.
So we've got you know, wall-to-wall coverage. We're calling it the TFL Insider, SEMA Insider Series. Remember, we make you a promise. You saw it first at the Fastlane Car and Truck. And Andre, you're going to be working hard to make that true, aren't you?
Yes, and also Alex and Case are with me in Las Vegas. And all of us are working really, really hard to bring you also Toyota news. You name it, Nissan news, Chevy news, Ford news, Ram, Jeep, everything.
You got any parties you're going to?
There's a couple of dinners.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, a couple of dinners we hope to hit up, but no parties. It's work, 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 Roman.
You're gonna take in some shows besides SEMA?
No.
You're gonna go see the Blue Man?
No, I don't have time for that. Oh my gosh.
Thunder Down Under, Andre?
No, it's focused. Focused on automotive.
All right.
Only automotive.
All right. Well, let's talk about the Alpina. Why are you so in love with the Alpina? Let me tell you what an Alpina is. First of
okay.
all, Alpina is not part of BMW. It's a custom German tuner that has, for the last several decades, worked closely with BMW. It's its own company. And basically what they do is they take a BMW, with the help of BMW, they work closely together, and they tune the car to, not necessarily to make it more horsepower-y, if that's a word, but to make it more torquey. So, you know, it's more luxurious, and they make they massage the engines to make them more torquey. Of course, they've got, you know, a lot of kind of Alpina signature things they do, like a 20-spoke wheel. They put Alpina badging all over the vehicle. I got to ride in the new, Andre, Alpina B8, which is basically a grand touring coupe. Yeah, it's back there, a two-door.
If you're watching this, we also have images in the video.
A two-door-like coupe with four doors, Andre, and 600-plus horsepower. I think BMW says it'll do 0 to 60. It's all-wheel drive, of course, in 3.5 seconds. But launching, that was the hardest launching car I've been in outside of a Tesla in a long time. It's beyond tunnel vision. I want to say, if we had a Soul DL, which we should have brought, it's probably a sub 3.2, maybe 3.1 car, which is amazing. The front actually lifts off when you launch that thing using launch control. It's incredible.
So this is part of the reason why I love the Alpina cars. As you know, I'm a kind of a truck guy too. So, but the Alpina cars always captured my attention, and I was always lusting after these cars. I've never owned one, unfortunately. Several years ago, I was really fortunate. I met the late Justin Wilson at our test track.
Yes.
We tested an Alpina B8, which was kind of the precursor to this B8. I'm sorry, that was the B6.
Yes, okay.
This is the B8.
I was like, it was a B6, I think.
Yeah, it was a B6. It's a 6.6 series. And back then, the M cars were mostly rear-wheel drive, right? Yep. So that was the signature M performance car, true M, was rear-wheel drive. But Alpinas were all-wheel drive. So they're capturing the same power, but putting it down a little bit more effectively using all-wheel drive. Of course, this moved on, right? The latest M5 is all-wheel drive, et cetera, et cetera.
Or two-wheel drive. You can go either way.
Yes. So these Alpina cars were always very luxurious, very powerful, high performance. And eventually, if it works out, I'll buy maybe a used Alpina.
I want to say this one was 140.
I cannot afford that right now.
You get 140,000, Andre, burning a hole in your pocket. You
no, not right now, but eventually I will.
Maybe you could trade in your Puhanka.
And my F-150 on this.
And your wife's BMW i3.
Every car.
And the Subaru Outback.
Yes.
What else you got?
That's about it.
That's it, yeah.
Okay. Oh, a Mazda B4000. I can trade that in, too.
You give that to your dad, yeah. And you'd be about halfway to the price of that.
Yes. So it's expensive. Maybe when I retire in 40 years, I'll buy one.
But anyway, it was a really cool car. Certainly extremely luxurious, right? The other part of that coin is that they bring a lot of luxury to it. So they massage the car. They make it ride a little bit better. The paint was just incredible. You can see it. It was this kind of dark green yet light. It's weird. It was like dark and light, depending on the kind of light.
Changes color. Yeah.
So if you looked at it kind of at sunset, you think it's a dark green. But if you looked at it in bright sunlight, you think it's a very bold green color. The interior was just scrumptious.
And Alpinas always have these unique wheels, right?
Yeah, 20-spoke.
20-spoke wheels, which is large diameter wheel, which is just gorgeous.
So that was really cool to drive. Cars that cost that much money, in my mind, are always kind of unobtainium. So it's hard to review it because I can't put myself in the mindset of the person who would buy that. So it's great that you're here because, I could never like imagine buying that car. I always think if I had $140,000, there's probably a lot of things I'd rather get than an Alpina. But it's cool that I have an Alpina fanboy next to me.
Well, not just that, but, realistically for me, I'm not a millionaire, but I think a used Alpina car would be maybe even a good buy. Because, the value will maybe 5 years down the line, maybe the cost comes down so you can actually get one.
I'm just wondering when BMW is officially going to buy Alpina, right? So it becomes its in-house brand for luxury.
Well, because that's what happened to AMG, right?
Yeah, same thing.
AMG was its own company or the motorsports.
BMW has always had M, but yeah. I could see them buying Alpina or making that relationship.
Because you can go to BMWUSA.com and actually buy an Alpina.
Yeah, they work very closely together, yeah. So that was probably, the most interesting car that you've probably never heard of that I got to drive. But they had their full lineup, I would say, of their M cars, their M Competition, and their MCS. So once upon a time, it was like you had the 3 Series and you had the M3. Really simple. Not any longer, Andre.
Right.
Now there's M3, there's the M4, there's the M3 Competition, the M4, the M5, the M5 Competition, the M5 CS. It's almost like the sense I got is they're almost going kind of the Porsche route, right, where like an M5 CS is one of those cars that if you get your hands on it, it'll probably be worth $50,000 to $100,000 more the second you want to flip it. Right, which is like a GT. It's like it would be like the equivalent of a GT3 or a 911 RS. It's like that.
So why is that? Is that because it's a limited number of them?
It's a limited number, and people want them, and they're very track focused, and they're kind of the ultimate BMWs. But to me, the feeling I was left with all these cars is like it wasn't fair because, like I said, we mainly had the M cars there, and the X4M, and the X3M, and the X3M Competition, and the X4M Competition. Like I kind of felt like BMW was maybe going down the wrong route. Like they should, instead of concentrating on competing directly with Porsche, which is what it feels like they're doing, they should be kind of competing more in terms of building just really great and sexy and comfortable cars that people want to drive, not necessarily that people want to take to the track.
Alpina?
Alpina, yeah.
Well, they have other Alpina models which are comfortable.
I was in an X4M competition. How much? Yeah. We were using those to commute between the resort we were in Palm Springs at Thermal Raceway and the racetrack. How much do you think? Take a guess. How much do you think the X4M competition cost?
I want to say X4.
Yeah.
I want to say like it's in the $70,000,
$95,000 for a vehicle that, let's face it, is probably built for like an empty nester guy, right? Who doesn't want to put anybody in the back, because you go in the back because of that sloping roof line. If you're like me or you, you're not going to fit back there. We had to have four people and it was tight. So, empty nester guy with a lot of money who's probably retired, because I don't see a lot of like 25-year-olds spending $95,000 on a BMW. And so I kind of felt like, you've kind of gone into the weeds there. And of course, we were at the racetrack, and the coolest thing I got to do is I got to get behind the wheel of a race car, a GT4, mm-hmm. M4 GT4.
Not a street car. This was
pure race car. What they do is they sell them. I think they're $250,000 to people who want to race them. And basically, they take – this was a previous generation M4. They take like an M4 and they strip out all of – the stuff that makes it, comfortable. They put in dedicated race seats. They put in a dedicated steering wheel, that one that's like the Tesla now, the yoke, right, that actually pops off, mm-hmm. a special instrument cluster. And then the only, like, creature comforts, which is actually cool for a race car, that it has is air conditioning. And thank God, because I was in Palm Springs. So it actually has air conditioning. And then it has a little control for rear mirrors, because it doesn't have a main mirror. It's got the two on the side, and if you're racing, that's important. And we got to go get suited up as a race car driver, put on the helmets, and then go around
and
the
suits,
track.
All that.
Yeah, and I was the Michelin man, dude. I was definitely the Michelin man in one of those suits, one of those BMW racing.
So it was hot. You were in the big suit. Thank goodness for air conditioning. I can see that.
And the car, we first went around in an M3 competition, and then. We got into the race cars and got to do some hot laps in the race cars. And it's not any quicker per se. Basically it's got the same power plant. It's a lot louder because it doesn't have any of the emission stuff. But my God, it's on slicks, and the amount of grip and the amount of braking that you have is just absolutely mind-blowing. And because the car is so capable and so beyond like what most everyday drivers are used to, it has two modes. It's got wet and it's got normal traction control, and they said you have to have it in wet mode,
because
it keeps you on the track.
Inexperienced driver, racing drivers, right?
Yeah. It keeps you on the track. And so that was interesting. Of course, paddle shifters that you have to shift yourself. And then another interesting thing was it's got a custom race car display, so obviously it's got that kind of bar graph that as you're accelerating, it gives you like it goes from green to yellow to red, which tells you when to upshift or downshift. And then I've never seen this before, but this must be a race car driver thing. But I've never been in a race car before. When you hit the brakes, they're very heavy. I mean, like heavier than you've ever seen any. I mean, it's like you're doing a workout even to get them to slightly start. And then the display tells you how much bar of pressure. How many bars of pressure you're applying, it's kind of a numeric value of how hard you're braking. And if you want the ABS to kick in, it's like imagine kicking an elephant in the gut as hard as you could to get its attention. That's what it was like to try to get that thing, to stomp on the brakes. But thank you, BMW, for that experience. It was a thrilling experience, and I'm just grateful that I got to get behind the wheel of a race car, even though I did look like the Michelin man.
So you also saw some new models, right? You saw two series.
Yes.
Many others, minis also.
Yes. So I saw there's a driving embargo until November on the new the one we drove was the 240i, M240i, which is like not the M2, but
it's approaching it, right?
It's approaching it. It's the one below it. So I can't tell you how it drives, but interesting thing about that car is that it doesn't have the big beaver nose, the big beaver teeth kind of kidney grill that you'd expect from, you know,
the latest BMWs.
The latest BMWs, yeah. And so it's a little bit understated. You know, I think the 2 Series, in my mind, is a car that has the DNA of the brand, right? It's the car that, like, most closely resembles like the 2002, which is always the most classic of BMWs. So it's got those magic BMW qualities where it's, you know, sexy, it's fast and quick, it's fun to drive, and it's very sporty without being so sporty that you know, it beats you up. And a lot of these competition cars, they're wonderful on the track, but on the road, you know,
you have to be dedicated. You have to be dedicated to that craft.
Yeah. So we did a walk around video. It's over at TFL Cars. So if you want to see what it looks like, if you want to watch me try to get in the back seat, which is funny, go check it out. I think it's a little bit larger. I want to say it's a little 2 inches longer than the previous generation. So there's a little bit more space in the vehicle. The most interesting time I had was in the M3 competition, which we're also reviewing. That's also going to be up on TFL Car. It had the competition seats, and it was this crazy San Paolo yellow, I think was the name of the color. It's this bright yellow color, and it had, I think it was called like watercraft blue or something to do with like the ocean, right? Or like boat, mm-hmm. a jet ski blue or something like that, interior. So it had this crazy yellow with kind of this like watery blue interior, and it had the carbon fiber seats, which as a Michelin man, I didn't.
Can you talk about the seats, how comfortable or uncomfortable they were?
Tommy
felt
they were.
Is that embargoed?
I don't think that's a driving impression. That's a seating impression. I don't. Okay. But who knows? I don't want to step on BMW's toes. Let's just leave it at that. That Tommy was much happier in those seats than I was.
Okay. Yeah.
We can talk about them. They're on the M3. Actually, that's not true. That wasn't embargoed. We could talk about those.
They just looked wild, right?
Yeah. There's this little hump in between your legs. Which I didn't understand why it was there, but it's there. If anything, there should be a little trough, if you know what I'm talking about. Not a hump.
Okay. I gotcha.
Okay, yeah.
So, were there any electrified BMWs there?
No. The only electric vehicle there, which we can talk about, was we got to do an autocross in the Mini SE, which is the all-electric Mini, which we actually own. So that was a lot of fun.
Okay.
I sat in my group. I got on the podium. I took third.
Nice.
But it didn't count.
Why not?
Because we got like five tries at the autocross course. The first one was like, learn it. The second one was practiced. The third and fourth were the ones that counted. And the fifth one was for fun. And the one I got the best time on was the fifth one.
Was the fifth one the
last
one?
So it didn't count, yeah. So I would have had like third out of all the journalists there. Well, there were a lot of journalists there.
Very cool. And there were other Minis there, right? Classic Minis?
Yeah.
As well?
Yeah, and they had classic BMWs too that they didn't let us drive. They had a 2002. They had the E30 M3, which was really cool. But they did have a classic Mini. And it wasn't all that old. I think it was 1990, Tommy said. Mm-hmm. This gold color, which was freaky. And they let us drive that. So Tommy did a video over at TFL Classics where he compares the new Mini to the old Mini. And the question that we ask is, did BMW improve the Mini?
Aha, cool.
Yeah, and they had a Countryman. Yeah. They had a John Cooper Works. They had a base Mini. They had 2 convertibles. There were a lot of... Basically, BMW had maybe 50 cars there that we could all drive. That was pretty crazy.
It is pretty crazy. But they do that almost every year, right?
Yeah.
Where you can kind of sample, the journalists can sample, you know, a wide variety of their vehicles.
They call it the BMW Test Fest.
But other manufacturers are doing that. Are you doing that next week?
Yeah, next week I'm heading over to Asheville with Tommy, and we're going to be doing the Volkswagen Test Fest.
Okay.
So that's going to be our big...
So while I'm focused on automotive in Vegas, you're going to be focused on automotive
in Asheville. Yeah, I can't wait. We'll get to drive the new GTI and the new Golf R. So we're looking forward to that and looking forward to your coverage from Vegas.
Yeah. So... We had in the office, in our test fleet here on loan, we had a brand new 2022 Nissan Armada. which is...
We have.
And we have.
Yeah, because I just saw it sitting out there.
Yeah, it's right here right now. And it's the new one. It's actually, the exterior color is white, but it has a midnight package, which means all the badging, the grill, some other accents are blacked out. So it kind of has that stormtrooper look, which is really, really cool. And also in our fleet, test fleet on loan, we have a 2022 Toyota 4Runner TRD Pro.
And those absolutely do not compete.
No, they do not. But we are fortunate to have them both at the same time. So Nathan and I got together and we decided that we would go off-roading, obviously. Both of them are very capable. So we decided to take them on a trail run here in Colorado. And I wanted to take a slightly different tack because they don't compete, right? So I wanted to two themes. First of all, the Armada is based on the Patrol, a global architecture, and the 4Runner is kind of a Land Cruiser Prado architecture from overseas. So it's almost like, I called it the off-roading legends, because Patrol has been around for many, many decades. The Land Cruiser Prado has been around for many decades. And of course, the 4Runner itself. And also, so it's kind of like almost like forbidden fruit, because we're sampling kind of a global vehicle here in the United States. And also legendary.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, it's a stretch on the Armada called a legend because it is, you know, while it's based on a legend, it is
its own thing.
Yeah. But certainly the 4Runner, I'll give you that. That's certainly a legend. So you want to give us a clue as to how it went?
Yeah, so this video is coming to TFL Offroad channel, yeah. Obviously, so you can check it out as well there. So this Armada is not a true, like off-roader. It has four low, it has low range, but it does not have a selectable locker, for example. It does not have very aggressive tires. So nonetheless, we still went to Tombstone Hill, Tombstone Trail, here in Colorado. On the other hand, the 4Runner TRD Pro, it does have a lot of off-road focused equipment. It has a rear locker, it has a crawl modes, it has off-road terrain modes, it has great tires, it has shocks and suspension that's specific for off-roading. But nobody got stuck. How about that? I'll just say that we did not get stuck. I was driving the Armada, Nathan was driving the 4Runner, and I was able to take the Armada everywhere I wanted to go.
Well, that's impressive for you know a big vehicle that is more of a, let's face it, a family hauler. But didn't you also like that vehicle?
Yeah, I did.
Tell me about that. That's what I'm curious about. How much? What'd you tow? How much weight? And how'd it go?
So, a year ago, right? The Armada was updated, facelifted, refreshed. The interior is all new. They also moved their towing capacity just a little bit higher. It's now 8,500 pounds. So it's a true, you know, truck-based, frame-based, three-row SUV, full-size SUV with a good capacity. And they also, Roman, and I was really pleased, they have an integrated brake controller in this thing, which is really important, because if you want to tow, you don't want to, you know, go out and get an accessory brake controller from somewhere else. So it's built-in, integrated. We towed about 8,100 pounds, so we were pushing this Armada close to its limit. You know, 85 is its limit. We were towing about 8,100 pounds, and this was our flat deck trailer, and we had our 1965 Ford F100 as our ballast, which is always looks very impressive and huge and big. And I compared it actually against an F-150, so it was kind of like SUV versus truck. You know, how different is it to tow with an SUV versus a pickup truck?
So, yeah, tell me. So how different is it? Let's cut to the chase. Let's give them the. Which one tows better, the truck or the Armada?
So you know, the iGauntlet, we have very specific measurements, right? Yeah. We have the braking performance on the way down. We have time up the mountain, fuel efficiency up the mountain. The Armada is equipped with a wonderful V8, 400 horsepower, 5.6 liter. Sounds great. The F-150 had a hybrid. It was a power boost, so twin turbo with electric power. So once again, they do not compete, right, in any shape or form. But they can tow the same amounts to some extent. And the Armada has an independent rear suspension. The truck has a solid axle. So in the very end, the numbers were leaning towards the pickup truck.
Okay.
So better braking performance on downhill. I didn't touch the brakes as often as I did in the Armada. Not by a huge margin. It was 6 versus 9 brake applications. On the way up, the elevation of this test, which is the world's toughest towing test, was kind of... the Armada was struggling a little bit.
Really?
It slowed down just a little bit. Up the mountain. It wasn't bad. It wasn't a bad performance, but it was not as commanding as that twin turbo in the Ford. But the comfort, the suspension worked well in the Armada. So my verdict was really, if you want to tow about 8,000 pounds, the Armada will do it. Fine. It was comfortable. It wasn't very loud. You know, it was no trailer sway. Everything was really controlled. But you know, if you want to tow a little bit more or actually be a little bit more confident, you have to get a truck.
Fair enough. I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, trucks are specifically designed for towing, so it makes sense to me that the truck would be the better of the two.
Slightly better, but you know what the
funniest... Of course, you are a truck guy.
But the funniest part is what I didn't expect. Not the funniest, but what I really didn't expect is, you know how we measure the trip meter efficiency?
Yeah.
The Armada did better.
Really?
The big V8 towing the same weight was a little bit better, according to the trip meter, on MPG versus the hybrid truck, the F-150. You would think the hybrid would be better, right?
You would think. Everybody's going to hybrid, so you think the reason they're doing that is to have more fuel economy upside, but maybe you're right. Maybe
but
you
know, I think
when you get into the turbos,
and you are, because yeah, you're climbing a mountain 7% grade with a trailer, you're using a lot of your power. You know, the turbos are lit, the electric motor is helping to some extent in the F-150, and it's really, you know, I had a lot more acceleration power. If I wanted to go faster, I could have. If I wanted to pass somebody easily, I could have. But you're using fuel once again. It you know, you're not going to get a lot of efficiency doing that.
So what was the price difference? Because I'm sure that was pretty dramatic. Because the truck was that a King Ranch?
Yeah, it was a King Ranch.
Okay. It is a King Ranch. It is a Ranch, King Ranch.
And it was approaching 77 grand.
Wow, so, Andre, that's a lot of money.
And this is MSRP.
Yeah,
you know, we have other stories on TFL now about markups and market adjustments, right?
Yeah.
And you guys have responded to us, and thank you very much for doing that.
We're going to get into that in a second. I wanted to bring up some of these
yeah, you should.
Emails. Yeah, yeah, I've got them right here.
So that was the MSRP on the F-150 King Ranch, which was a King Ranch, which is already a luxurious truck with a lot of options and equipment on top of it. Like, for example, it had onboard scales, which was is a really cool feature where it actually helps you determine how much weight you have, either from the tongue weight of the trailer or from the payload that you're carrying in the bed or the people that you're carrying. So that feature was there. It had a 7.2 kilowatt inverter generator. So all those things added up to 77 grand approximately. The Armada Midnight Edition was actually 64,000.
Wow.
Which is also, you know, sounds like a high number.
But it's not as high as
But it's not as high as the F-150. That's a big difference between them. And also, it was very comfortable. Leather interior, premium feeling. So, yeah, I think the Armada is still a pretty good value when you consider everything that it does.
So this week we did an interesting series of videos over at TFL Now. And obviously, if you guys, you know, have been shopping for new cars or used cars or trucks, you know that the market is topsy-turvy because of a bunch of different issues, from chip shortages to supply chain issues. It's almost hard to get a new vehicle now, which has also basically cost the used car market to explode. So, you know, the statistics are pretty staggering. Year over year, used car prices are up 30%. And it's getting to the point now where some used car prices are as expensive as new car prices.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, some dealerships are using this moment in time to take advantage of the demand and the lack of supply and do what we're euphemistically calling market adjustments, right?
Yeah.
Or what they're calling market adjustments.
Right.
Basically, you know, they're taking the MSRP stands for manufacturer suggested retail price, and they're taking the suggested part of that to heart and
suggesting something higher.
And suggesting something higher. Mm-hmm. And some aren't doing that. A lot of them, of course, are also sticking to the MSRP. And so what we wanted to do is we wanted to highlight the different dealerships, and we wanted to be very straightforward about this. We didn't want to be, you know, one way or the other. We wanted you guys to be able to go and, you know, buy a vehicle at the best possible location for the best possible price. So we asked you for your stories of recent new car buying, and some of them were, you know, great, and some of them were terrifying.
Well, I think the majority was you guys responded with markups, and I think that's probably where some of the lot more interesting stories lie.
Yeah.
But a lot of you also said that you either got an MSRP on a new vehicle purchase or below.
Yeah.
You know, some of you actually were able to get great deals. We talked about it in the other video. For example, one of you bought a Ram 1500 at a discount. One of you bought a Ford Maverick at MSRP, but many of you could not. So we
asked you to send in pictures of like stickers with
market adjustments,
and we got hundreds of responses. If you want to see some of the responses, go over to TFL Car where Zach is compiling them, or over to TFL Truck where Andre is compiling them, or watch that video on TFL Now. But I did want to read. I think this is probably the best one because this individual, Jason is his name, emailed us and let me read it to you. It's really interesting because he went to a whole bunch of different dealerships. And so in one email, I think we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 dealership experiences, and they kind of encompass the current situation in the best way I could find.
Okay,
So Jason says, sorry, we'll go through them one at a time, and we'll talk about them, okay? So the first one is, Jason says, sorry, I didn't take any pictures, but we did have an interesting experience in a few dealerships that we visited and called over the course of a Saturday. So this was over one day. First one, Joe Myers Toyota. We were in the market for a new 2021 Toyota Venza for our parents and visited Joe Myers Toyota in Houston, Texas. They had one Venza on the lot, Andre, one.
Okay.
And that was in the LE trim for around $34,000 on the sticker. The initial salesperson told us that, yeah, we'll work with you on the price. Come on in. Fair enough.
Fair.
We get inside, and he comes back with a piece of paper that shows $39,000 out the door. Apparently, there was a dealer markup that they failed to tell us about before we went inside. A couple of the managers came by, and one wanted to explain in quotes to us how they got to $39,000, told them we didn't need math lessons, and told them monthly payments amounts are non-issues, and give us your best price, OTD. Out the door.
Mm-hmm.
The best they could do was $39,000 OTD and still included a markup, so we left. And I think this first story exemplifies what a lot of people are doing right now, Andre, which is just they're just giving up, right? People are just like, this is crazy time. So I think by far the biggest reaction that people are having is like, if I'm not in a desperate situation, I'm just gonna walk away and just basically checking out of the new car market.
But also it's also highlighting another practice that some dealers are doing where either they say call for price, right? Or maybe the price may not be reflecting everything that's happening, which is not a good practice. I mean,
well, it feels bait and switchy.
Yeah,
I mean that's not a good practice because as a buyer of things, you know, you don't want to be fooled into thinking you're gonna, you know, pay one thing, but then the real price is another thing. Right. It's not a good practice. I think in some places it's actually outlawed. But in the end, what it does is it just has consumers tapping out of buying new cars at this moment. And at some point, I don't know where this is all going to end up, all right? I really don't know. But, you know, if you apply basic economic concepts, right, you have to figure that car dealerships and manufacturers don't make money by not selling cars.
Yeah, so this is a complicated situation, obviously. We're doing a lot of research into this. There are component shortages, right, that are forcing manufacturers and dealerships. Obviously, dealerships have low inventories. It's a very tough situation. Manufacturers want to build vehicles, but they can't. There's a tire shortage, right? There's a glass shortage. There's a chip shortage. There is every kind of shortage right now, which is pretty wild. And so, yeah, so a lot of dealerships that are choosing to market adjust vehicles, especially very popular ones, they are, well, a lot of them are upfront about this. If you go to their websites or if you call them, they'll say, right there, there's a market adjustment on this vehicle. You could see it right there. So, and I would understand, like, if you have a used car, you just keep your used car, right? If you don't have to buy something, you're going to walk away.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, Andre, you know, dealerships and manufacturers don't make money by not selling cars. And the road that this is on right now is, it could potentially...
It's a bad road.
It's a bad road because, you know, the recent reports out there are that dealerships have now laid off almost a million salespeople across the country. And that's just a drop in the bucket if the factories start closing. Because then we're talking about tens of millions of people potentially. So, you know, it's not the road that we want to be on. Okay, let's go to number two, okay? Jason says, Hub Hyundai of Houston. Okay, we walked over to this dealership because it was just next to Joe Myers. We walked a lot and really wanted to see the new Santa Cruz looked like.
Oh, great.
In person, the salesperson came out and said they wouldn't get any until November, December. We had a chat, some chit-chat, and just looked to see if they had, and the salesperson told us, all of my customers pay over MSRP. Needless to say, we left. So there's another one that...
So once again, the vehicle they wanted to see wasn't there.
Yeah.
There were markups on other vehicles.
And the salespeople said, we're asking. And, you know, in the story you did, Andre, where you actually highlighted, you know, the various markups that the dealerships are doing, one of the comments on that video was a person who was in the business, and they said that other manufacturers are willing to pay them, I'm sorry, other dealerships are willing to pay them over MSRP. So basically the comment was, how can we sell to the public when we can sell the same vehicle to like
to another dealership
for over MSRP? And if that were me, I'd be like, you know, I'd be like, dude, that is a win-win. You you make more money on your allocation.
Yeah, send it there.
And you send it to the people who will then charge double MSRP, right? And you will at the same time maintain your customer base and your relationships without looking like you're the one who's, you know, asking for a lot of money and leaving the impression that you're greedy. So I think that's a great way to bankrupt your competition while at the same time getting over MSRP. So I think what they were saying is if the competition is willing to pay more, why shouldn't the customer? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, if the competition's willing to pay more, that should be your business model. All right.
Wow.
Number three, Don McGill Toyota. We stopped at this dealership on our way over to the Lexus dealership down the street, told them we were interested in the new 2021 Venza LE. Salesperson said, oh yeah, we have one of them on the lot.
There you go.
Okay. We kept asking how much it was and asking if, and he was super vague in giving us the price. So they wanted to know, he was super vague. We go inside and he's writing all of my information, which is also weird, right? I hate that. I hate when like, I hate. And then goes and pulls the car around for us. So I hate when you walk into any store or you're buying something and they want your name, they want your email address,
your birthday, your phone number. Something.
Don't do that. this is not.
We're not signing a contract.
We're not getting a mortgage. We're not transacting anything financial yet. Do not ask for my personal information. I consider that stuff highly personal when I walk in the door. Right? It's creepy and it freaks me out. Right? I don't know who you are. Why do you want my birth date? Why do you want my driver's license? You know, I get the fact that at some point if I want to test drive it, you want it, but do not ask for that first thing because it just creeps me out. How about you, Andre? Do you feel comfortable with that?
No, I don't want to give my information to everybody. Yeah. No, so yeah. Once, if I want to buy something, yeah, I understand. You know, now is the time where I want to sign and give my information.
So anyway, he goes on to say, or to write, we took a look out the window, and sure enough, there was Venza with a certified pre-owned.
Ooh, okay.
Plates. He came back in and asked, so that's a new Venza, and just pulled the wrong plate on the car, right?
So, certified pre-owned?
Yeah, so okay. Apparently he asked about a new one. This guy came back with a car that had certified pre-owned plates on it.
Okay.
And asked, oh, that's a new one. His response, oh, it's brand new model for this year. We were like, you got to be kidding me. I told him, I'm looking for a new, not used Venza. Yeah,
brand new,
not used Venza. We took a look at it anyway, and it was the exact same spec as a Venza we saw at Joe Meyer, but with almost 5,000 miles. So maybe like a dealer, I don't know, demo or something, right? Mm-hmm. But it certainly wasn't new with 5,000 miles. Again, we kept asking for the price of the vehicle because there wasn't any price on any of the windows. We went back inside and finally got the asking price for almost $47,000 out the door for a used Venza, capital used.
So that was higher than the previous price they saw.
Yeah, we walked out of the dealership thinking, wow, that 39K Venza sounded, in all caps, really good right now.
Okay, wow, that's wild.
So, you know, that's another great example of like a classic red flag, right? When you keep asking about the price, you see that a lot when you go, even Auto Trader, right, where they say call for price or, you know, inquire about price.
Yeah.
You know that price is never going to be below MSRP.
Because otherwise they would state it.
They would state it, yeah. If the price was good, they'd be like 5K below MSRP. And you'll see that sometimes too because they want you to buy the car. If it's always call or inquire, it's just going to be expensive. It just is. So once again, red flag, probably a good... good time.
So the story's not over, right?
No. That was number three. We got more.
Okay.
All right. Number four. This is Westlake Lexus. We stopped by this dealership and talked to a contact we dealt with last year and said the inventory is just low right now and they were not doing any markups, just straight MSRP. They just didn't have any models and that we were interested in, but it was good to know that they were doing MSRP. So that's Westlake, Texas, I believe in Houston, okay?
Okay.
Number five, great.
Okay.
Hey,
okay.
Westlake, thank you.
Nice.
Appreciate it. Thank you. If you guys are in Houston and you want a Lexus and they have the model, maybe you go to Westlake. Number five, Sewell Lexus of Dallas. Or maybe it's Dallas. Anyway, if you're in Texas.
Right? Westlake.
Westlake. Sewell Lexus of Dallas. We usually buy from this Lexus dealership because my parents have been buying from them since 1992. So it's one of those where they have a relationship, okay?
Yeah.
With their first LS400. Nice car, by the way.
Nice.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, good, okay. good choice there. That car will do a million miles, Andre.
Yeah, and it's still classic to this day.
Yeah.
I mean, the styling and everything
that
about
first
it.
LS, they like put as much, you know, Toyota does like reliability. That one, they added an extra sprinkle of reliability to.
Or maybe several sprinkles.
Yeah, that's got the Land Cruiser reliability too. The first one. I'm not sure about the later ones, but that one.
Yes.
We purchased a UX 250H from them last year. That's
okay.
Not bad. Okay, good. So the hybrid, right, the small little crossover hybrid.
Right.
At a phenomenal price to capture in Houston market share. We called them, and they were also doing no dealer markups, just straight at MSRP. Again, no models in inventory or in transit that we're interested in. So there you go, another good story. So
okay.
Sewell Lexus of Dallas, there's another one for you guys if you're interested in a Lexus. All right, now they decided to go to a Volkswagen dealership.
Okay, well, they had some time.
Dude, you had time and you were kind of all over the place. But that's also another thing. Oftentimes people say they want one car, but really with their heart they want something else.
Yeah.
So their head says,
Your brain says one way, right?
Yeah.
And so what happened at the VW dealership now?
So West Houston Volkswagens, we ended up purchasing a 2022 Tiguan 4Motion from this dealership. At just below sticker, they advertised no markups, and the Tiguan seemed to fit the bill for my parents traveling.
Okay.
All right. Our salesman, Gabriel, was a breeze to deal with. This was the first German brand we've ever purchased. A couple of the places we called were pretty upfront about having markups. Honda dealership had a $2,000 markup on the HRVs. Another Toyota dealership in Oklahoma had a $1,500 markup on the Venza LE that was in transit. If we had known there were Toyota dealerships further out with no markup, such as Toyota of Seattle, we would have purchased from them and taken a road trip back to Texas. We would have rather spent the markup on traveling and slash a road trip to get back instead of the cost of transportation to Texas rather than giving it away. At least it would have been some value. We would have been the benefit of spending that money. Sorry for the long stories. We thought you'd enjoy your reviews and we thoroughly enjoy your reviews on your YouTube channel and purchased a Model Y Performance last year based on Tommy's roller test. Jason, this guy buys a lot of cars. Jason, you are
the king.
You are the king. I am thoroughly impressed.
Yeah.
So that brings up another point, right?
Yes.
And that is Right now, Andre, there's a strong headwind blowing, I think, in the direction of dealership model, right? So I think, and I'm not a historian by any means, but I think the reason that dealers began in America instead of, you know, why can you buy an Apple computer direct from Apple, but you can't buy a Ford direct from Ford? Why is there a middleman in all this? And I think what happened is when, you know, cars were first invented, the world of automotive manufacturing was small, and people like Henry Ford didn't have deep pockets, right? So they put all their money into manufacturing
and developing, yeah.
And developing, and then the dealers would buy them, and then they would sell them, and so it became kind of an easier shortcut, right? They didn't have to open up stores, they didn't have to deal with the public, they had a much smaller group of people that they had to deal with, and so that's how this kind of middleman situation developed. And then over the years, of course, the dealership model became ingrained in our legal system because dealers got political power and started writing the dealership model into law, so that it made it illegal for the manufacturer to sell cars directly to the car buyer, mm-hmm. which to me is very un-free market. You know, if you want to sell, if I'm manufacturing something and I want to sell it, why do I have to go through a middleman? Let's face it, for most transactions, a middleman is not good for consumers.
Yeah,
and it adds a layer of price.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, of course, Tesla came around, and Mr. Musk said, "I'm not doing that. I'm gonna
sell direct.
I'm gonna sell direct." And you know, in many of the states, including now, like the hardest ones are like Michigan and Texas right now, they said, "Oh, you're not, because the laws are such that you can't." And he said, "Oh, yes, I am, and I've got lawyers," and got all lawyered up and took those laws to court and basically won. So now in most states, except for Michigan, which is ironic, and in a way, Texas also ironic. You know what's ironic about Texas?
Well, for Tesla, it's very ironic.
Yeah, why didn't like Tesla go to the Austin city government that runs Texas, right, and say to them, "Hey guys," I shouldn't say Austin City, I should say state.
"We're building a factory here.
Yeah, we're going to invest several billion dollars in Austin and in the state of Texas. And in order to do that, we just want one little thing, and that is the ability to actually sell our cars here."
Because, but no.
Because we're not using a dealer. That's not happening.
Yeah.
I don't know. It would seem the Tesla would have been in a position of power at that moment, but they didn't, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on the way you look at it. So in those two states, they can't, but everywhere else, they basically sell, for the most part, cars directly. And then, you know, the other, let's call them tech car companies, because that's what they are, right? They're electric car companies. Mm-hmm. Said, "You know what? If Tesla can do it, we can do it." So now you've got Rivian.
Same model.
Right? That's selling direct. They're trying. You know,
sold 56. No, they built 56 vehicles in the first month, and they sold 44.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Like, so that's not a lot of sale.
No, right now. And we think it's because they're trying to go public. And so right now we think friends of RJ, people, insiders in the company are getting their first Rivians. But if you're a consumer, I don't think, except like for a couple of show people, nobody's actually gotten Rivians yet, as far as we can tell. But that may change. And that came from the SEC filing. So that's mm-hmm. how we know that they've built 52 and sold. And we also know that they have 50,000 reservations, because that was also in the filing.
Yeah.
So at 42 a month, it's going to take a while.
Yeah, they need to ramp up their production in a serious way.
If you're out there waiting for your Rivian,
yeah,
I think they will. I think they're just doing this, like I say, because they're going public. I think realistically, they're going to ramp up in January, and hopefully. But you never know. It could be, once again, they're affected by the same chip shortage as everybody else is.
And now Lucid is a new company too, right?
So now Lucid started ship cars to customers, and they're also going direct. And I'm wondering, Andre, how long do you think it'll be before somebody at, like, I don't know, pick the brand, will say, "Why aren't we doing this?" Do you think that in the boardroom of GM or Ford, or you know, in Japan, in Tokyo, wherever Toyota's headquarters? Where's Toyota headquartered? Tokyo City. It's Tokyo City, right?
Well, don't they have their own city?
Tokyo City.
Yeah.
I think that's outside of Tokyo.
Toyota City, which is outside of Tokyo.
Yes. Isn't Mazda in Hiroshima?
I believe so. Yeah. Now you're testing my geography.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
anyway, I'm just... So, you think that somebody in those boardrooms would be like, "Hey, you know, now that we're in this situation where, you know, other companies are doing it, do we really need dealerships? I think that's a valid question that if I were in a boardroom, I would be asking. And that's a valid question that if I were a dealership, I might be asking myself before I start jacking prices up too much.
Yeah, and I think, so first of all, I want to comment that in a lot of the instances, I think a dealership model is good in a way because it has a flavor of local person ownership, right? I know some dealerships are owned by conglomerates or
that's
big companies.
But that's going away too. Honey.
Yeah,
the small fish are being eaten by the big fish.
I know that's unfortunate too. But
you know the Jeep dealer Pollard here?
Yeah,
no longer Pollard.
Well, but Johnson Auto Plaza.
That's still Johnson. Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying.
How long?
Well, I don't know, but that's what I enjoy because I can actually see and meet the owner of the dealership, and you know, and they have good practices, and I feel like you know I'm buying a vehicle, but I'm also supporting a local community and local ownership, and I can actually, if I have a problem, I can go to them directly. If I have to call Michigan or somewhere else and try to get my issue resolved,
but you know, but that's if I'm being the devil's advocate, yeah. I would say. You know, if we have a problem with this Mac, right, we can just go to the Mac store. I mean, they have a whole team of people called geniuses that are there not only to fix this, right, which they will charge you for. They will charge you a good deal for.
Yeah.
But also to educate you on it. And let's face it, out of all the things that dealerships do, the education part is not great.
Usually not great.
Not great. Right, usually it's right. Like, here are your keys.
Right. Usually, well, when we go shopping, sometimes we know more about the vehicle than the salespeople.
True that, dude.
So, I don't know. But, so, it's hard when there's an established model, right? And it's employing a lot of people, right? So, you know, how do you evolve? You know, that could be an interesting conversation, actually. You know, with hope maybe one of the people we know in a dealership, I don't know if they have obviously thought about it, right? I don't know how they're approaching this.
So I've talked to manufacturers, and I've said, have you considered, you know, moving away from the dealership model? And all of them have, like, looked at me like I just fallen out of the tree, like I was crazy, and, like, these are their business partners. So, you know, and the hard part, of course, is these were some pretty, you know, high up people. They weren't like the heads of companies, but if it's a foreign company, they were the top people here in America for that company. So they looked at me like I was crazy. Maybe I am crazy, but if I were, you know, sitting on a board of a company, it would certainly be a question that, especially at this point in time, the question is, Andre, who's got the power in that relationship? You know, is it the dealership or is it the manufacturer? I think it's the manufacturer because they're the ones who build the cars.
Yeah, if they want to stop building cars, that's their power, right? Or shift their production or do whatever. I think they have a lot of power. There's another wind that's blowing where dealerships used to have hundreds of vehicles on the lot. A lot of them had to be discounted because there was a lot of choice and a lot of options sitting there. And now when we spoke, you know, for example, with Ram, they said they want to shift more to pre-orders, right? So vehicles that you actually select yourself, so you're picking all the right options that you want and all the right features and everything like that, and then they'll build it for you specifically.
Which also moves the model to a more direct sales model.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, what is the role of the middleman? They get the vehicle that you pre-ordered, and what value are they adding then?
Right. Hopefully their value could be servicing.
But if it's electric, there's not a lot of service, and the dealers know that.
I'm shrugging my shoulders.
Yeah, you're shrugging your shoulders.
If you cannot see, it's a tough question to pose.
I guess I'm being hard on dealers because you know we have been inundated with emails of and look, I get it, Andre. If you've got a hot vehicle. That is relatively expensive. And I'm talking about TRX, I'm talking about Bronco, I'm talking about Raptor, I'm talking about G-Wagons, you know, and you mark that up from, let's say it's a G-Wagon from a base of 126, which you'll never find, let's say 150 to 200. There's not a lot of people who are going to shed alligator tears because if you can afford a $150,000 G-Wagon, you can probably afford a $200,000 G-Wagon. And if you can afford a $95,000 TRX, you can probably afford a $125,000 TRX. That's
a whole nother level.
Yeah, that's kind of the free market at work. But, you know, Ford has just built the least expensive car in their, and I say car with air quotes because it's a truck, in their lineup, and it's of course the Maverick, right? It's $19,900, and yet we're seeing markups on those of between $3,000 and $5,000. And now I
actually
think,
$9,000. Somebody said
really $9,000.
$9,000 markup on a new Maverick.
And now it kind of starts to feel like you're kicking the little guy when he's down.
Yeah, because you know the biggest news about that little pickup is that it was affordable, right?
Yeah.
Starting like you said with you know with Destination, you know 20 plus about $1,500. Destination is a whole nother can of worms.
Yeah, that's a manufacturer thing.
And then they're raising Destination charges too.
Yeah, I think that the most the supercars are very high, but the company that is doing that right now to a large extent is Stellantis. I want to say the Destination on a Grand Wagoneer is almost $2,000.
Well, maybe just a little bit over $2,000. Yeah, around $2,000.
And if you're wondering what a Destination fee is, it used to be, the justification for it used to be that it was the amount of money it took to ship the vehicle from the factory to your dealership. Mm-hmm. But that amount is static. So whether your dealership is next to the factory or whether
2 miles away,
or whether it's 20 or 200 or 2,000 miles away, it's going to be the same amount. And basically, you know, I don't know why that was written into law the way it was, but that should just be part of the price of the vehicle, right? It's like saying, you know, we have to give you a special installation fee on the door because we had to install the door. It's part of
the cost.
It's part of the cost. Right? It's nothing special. You got to deliver it.
Yeah.
No one's going to the factory and picking it up because it's illegal.
Right.
So that's your cost. That's not something the consumer should be like, hey, oh, I get that. So that is certainly another part of the equation that's happening.
So the Maverick is affordable, supposed to be affordable. Some dealerships are marking it $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $9,000, we saw. One of you sent in a Maverick, I think it's about $46,000. That was the price of it. Then also vehicles like Kia Telluride still commanding a markup at some dealerships from like $50,000 to $60,000.
Yeah, and the Palisade.
And the Palisade is still very popular. There's, for example, the 4Runner we just discussed, the 4Runner TRD Pro, one of you guys found it with a $30,000 markup.
Wow.
$30,000 on a 4Runner.
Wow.
And a 4Runner is, it's a great vehicle, but yeah. Anyway, it's supposed to be relatively affordable.
And then the other part of this equation, which is also very worrisome right now, there's just a lot of like red flags around car sales at this moment that are bad for the economy in general, right? Because there used to be the saying, Andre, what's good for GM is good for America. And I don't believe that, but I certainly feel what's bad for GM is bad for America because they employ so many people. And you can take that as, you know, any manufacturer, not just GM. But Consumer Reports did a really interesting story where they dug into consumer lending car loans. And what they found was predatory lending. They found that, very long loans. They found a very high delinquency rate, basically because people can't afford these cars.
Well, they go upside down on them, right?
Yeah, at MSRP, then what ends up happening is they end up taking out a loan that's maybe, I don't know, 8 years, 10 years. You know, these are incredibly long loans, and eventually or inevitably, you're going to get upside down on them. The qualifying they found for those loans was not very stringent, so they found that people didn't need to necessarily, you know. They need to have a pulse.
Come on down.
They need to have a pulse, and that was all. It feels like that's just a recipe for a lending bubble that could take down a lot of other financial institutions with it. But let's close this podcast on some good stuff.
Happy notes?
No, I feel down. Let's close it on a positive note. There is a very big silver lining in this storm, and that is used car prices. So if you have a used car right now, your value of that car is much higher. So that means that, you know, if you've got an extra car sitting around, or if you can consolidate a car and not have to have two cars, this is a great time to sell your used car. You're going to get, in a lot of cases, more money than you paid for it. So that's the upside.
Yeah.
Right. And then the other upside is, you know, the part that we haven't talked about is yet there are those models like Carvana and Vroom, right, which are basically changing the way that at least used cars at this point are being bought and sold, where it's all kind of painless and simple. So you go online, you find the car, and
you
they deliver
a few
to
buttons,
you.
Right?
Yeah, and Nathan bought his Leaf that way. Mm-hmm. You deliver it to your house, and usually, you know, with Carvana, you've got a week to decide whether you want to keep it or not. And if there's something wrong, they'll fix it. And the good news there is because they're these companies, there's more than just a Vroom. There's a bunch of them. They're VC-funded companies, and they're competing for market share. One of our friends was just telling me, Alex on Autos was telling me that he just sold a Durango for more than the car is worth and for more than they can probably get for it. Right, so because they're trying to get market share, they're out there buying these vehicles. Oh, another one is it AutoNation, right? They also buy cars.
Mm-hmm.
So they're out there buying cars to get inventory, to get stock, to get market share, and they're spending a lot of money for them. So that's could be a painless way. He said he sold his Durango for more, I think, or as much as he paid for it, you know. They came, they picked it up, they cut him a check, didn't even like you know, looked it over, like, yeah, it looks good, and away it went. And he felt like the money they paid for it, they could not sell it for.
And it was painless for him.
And it was absolutely painless for him, yeah. So if you've got, you know.
So that's a positive.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big positive.
Yeah, so take advantage of all that VC money that's out there trying to capture market share and check them out. I'm not saying we had a bad experience with Vroom trying to buy a car, but I'm talking about selling a car.
Yeah.
So there you have it. Yeah.
Well, a little bit of positive news, you know, some negative too, but a lot more new vehicles coming.
Yeah.
And a lot of good news from SEMA is if you do have a used vehicle, you don't want to sell it, you can accessorize it. You know, and that's what we'll be seeing, you know, more and more and more. Also at SEMA next week, a lot of accessories, parts, maybe lift kits, lowering kits, etc.
Yep. Anyway, so... if you're listening to this on Monday, then please check out Andre Sima coverage. Check out my and Tommy's Volkswagen coverage. And remember, thank you very much to all our Patreon friends who are out there who are helping to support what we do. If you are interested in actually going off-road, we have to give a big shout-out to Onyx.
Yes, Onyx Off-Road Maps.
Yeah, they're great, though. They really help us. We get tons of emails from you guys. Hey, where do we go off-road? I'm coming to Boulder. I want to do some off-roading. Get Onyx. It'll show you where you can go off-road. It actually writes it up, tells you if it's hard, easy, where it goes, what's cool about it. It's a really great app.
Yeah, and you get it for 7 days for free.
Yeah.
You can try that app.
And what's the discount code, Andre?
TFL, just TFL, is you get 20% off an annual membership. So... that's a good deal.
Yeah, it's a good deal. So thank you to our friends at Onyx. And thank you guys for listening and watching. As always, this is Roman.
And Andre.
Saying check out tfl-studios.com and make it a web app for all your car TFL news. See you guys next time. Ciao.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.